This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Dirty Diddy demands 30 straight hours of forced sex marathons with no sleep. This, as we learn, Sean Combs fetishizes the NBA greats. Shaquille, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. As Dirty Diddy's defense team attacks the assault victim on the stand with a designer handbag, Dirty Diddy, what the cuck? A cuck, bi-curious, ashamed to have sex with men. This, according to his ex, and it is all coming out on the stand. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories, and I want to thank you for being with us. Objection! My rear end!
He needed to see that Willie free.
We've heard some bombshells.
A scene out of The Shining.
He beat her to hell and back!
Boom! He smacks her in the face.
Again! Objection! My rear end! That alleged sex assault victim on the stand undergoing intense cross-examination through out the day. Joining us at the courthouse, that's the Monahan Federal Courthouse in downtown Manhattan, special guest Tisa Tells joining us, pop culture investigator and host of Tisa Tells on YouTube. How did she hold up under cross? And what does a $5,000 Bottega designer bag have to do with anything?
Listen, we were in the court and we were wondering the same thing, but our little sweet bunny rabbit looks like she sharpened her shank today, and she pushed back on. And one of the more humiliating things for Diddy's defense team, it started off while she was just going through mundane questioning. Have you had this? Have you had that? She mentioned, you seem to be mad that he took somebody shopping in Chanel. She literally said, yeah, because all these other girls were, you know, being shown off, blah, 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 blah. The defense team thought they could sharpen and go in, and they thought they could actually break her, maybe get her to feel a little bit ashamed or show how petty she was. And the defense team went on this really odd way of questioning. Well, you got a Van Cleef bracelet? And she said, okay, I did. I'm sorry, a little bunny rabbit. She has a voice like sunshine. Yes, I did. Then they asked her, and you got a Bottega bag? How much does a Bottega bag cost? Now, this is a defense attorney in head-to-toe Chanel. Our little bunny rabbit sharpened her shank and said, you have one, don't you? To push it back. Because again, the line of questioning was so insulting. After she just finished a day ago telling us how she was an unwilling participant in a cracked out version of The Shining, they're now trying to say that somehow a bag and a bracelet somehow made up for everything. But however, the defense was a little bit taken aback. She said, well, I mean, how much is it? $1,500 or $5,000? Like, how much is a Bottega bag worth? And our little bunny rabbit said, how much is my body worth? And the whole courtroom was just sitting there in shock, because it was such a beautiful thing to see that a victim, somebody that Diddy had made feel small, broken, both mentally and literally physically, finally in that moment, why Diddy is sitting there looking like he's smirking at her almost, was able to hold her own against the defense team and push back and push the narrative that my body's worth more. I'm worth more. So it was a powerful moment in the court.
When you said Sean Combs, a.k.a. Diddy, is smirking in the courtroom, could you demonstrate that? Because that's not a good look. Even if he thinks he's winning, even if a couple of the jurors thinks he's winning, for him to smirk, that could backfire. Show me what he's doing.
Okay, so when I say smirk, okay, this is the best way I could use to describe it, but let me show you, okay? Whenever there are certain witnesses on, to me, it almost like he's trying to get into the witness's head, okay? Now, the smirk isn't something like, like a Marvel villain, like they've been accusing him of being. It's something more like his posture gets almost like he owns the place. He kind of slouches just to the side a little bit. His head's kind of like cocked just a little bit, and he's looking at them with a posture like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Now, he has wised up. Doesn't look like he's playing to the jury anymore. But when it comes to the witnesses, we saw this with Jane. We saw this with Mia. We saw this with Cassie. We saw this with Bona and everybody else. He literally still has his attitude. Like, he runs the room and he's literally just looking at them like, are you kidding me? Again, I would think that if I was on trial like that and people were lying on me, I would have righteous anger. I would just anything, or even just have a platonic face and body language where nothing can be read in. So the fact that he's almost imperceptibly kind of letting them know that he still runs the room, he still runs the place, it says something to me about where he is and whether he's truly repentant.
Joining me in All-Star Panel, but I've got to go right now straight to Rob Shooter joining us. PR guru for Sean Combs for years, no longer. Star of Naughty But Nice podcast, which is amazing. And you can find him at Rob Shooter Substack. And that's Shooter, S-H-U-T-E-R. Rob, the smirking, it actually gave me a flashback of the Scott Peterson double murder trial, where I would sit there and just watch Scott Peterson stride into the courtroom. And my immediate reaction, since I got cut from the girls' basketball team and became a cheerleader as a backup, I would watch the football team come onto the field and they'd be coming out all puffed up like that with their thrown back. And I would watch him walk in like that every day, like he was totally the cock of the walk, right? And everyone else started watching him, or maybe they were before me, and we would just watch him walk in. And that is what I think she's trying to say. It's an attitude. It's a bad look in front of a jury, but I want to hear your take on that. I can just see Sean Combs sweeping into a fancy restaurant or some other venue. I got to hear the whole thing.
Yeah, well, first of all, Nancy, I've seen that look from Puff. I know that look. I've seen it. I think we did a really, really great job explaining it. He looks down his nose. He cocks his head back and he looks down his nose as if he is the king of the world. It's a look of arrogance. It's a look of dominance. And it's a look that comes to him very, very easily. And that's the reason, Nancy, that he's having trouble turning it off. Sean Puffy is a very smart person. He, at the moment, is acting like an idiot. I think that's his natural look. I thought he would be smart enough, a good enough actor to hide it. However, that appears not to be the case.
You know, I guess too, Dr. Bethany Marshall, a psychoanalyst joining us out of LA, she has, you can see her now on Peacock. She wrote an incredible book, Deal Breaker, on Amazon. And you can find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany, king of the world. Okay, what's a cuck?
A cuck is somebody who wants to see his wife or partner having sex with other men. The fetishized fantasy that elicits arousal is the idea that the woman is cheating on him while he's away. And according to Jane, one of the sexual fantasies that he wanted to relive with her was while he was on his private jet, she was asking one of the male escorts to come in and have sex with her. So that's called cuckolding.
Okay, you're saying, Dr. Bethany, a cuck, C-U-C-K, wants to watch their partner have sex with somebody else. Why would you want that? Because, you know, my marriage motto is open marriage, open casket. So I don't get it. Explain that desire to me.
Well, I think there's a couple aspects. One, we see with people who have sex addiction and drug addiction is an impaired reward system where they need to push the envelope more and more to gain sexual arousal. But the other is that men who want to be cuckolded are often bi-curious and they have fantasies of having sex with other men, but they're too inhibited or for whatever reason, they're not going to carry it out. So they would rather watch their wife or partner have sex with other men so they can incorporate same-sex attraction and arousal into a heterosexual relationship.
I think I understand what you're saying, Dr. Bethany. Listen.
Jane says the hotel nights often involved cheating role play with Combs and the entertainer. Combs expected her to pretend he was away on a trip, and she was sneaking the entertainer into her home behind his back. This role play would begin over digital communications when booking a hotel night with an entertainer familiar to them, with Combs directing her to ask for explicit videos and images from the entertainer and respond with flirting messages like, "I can't wait to get you alone." Jane says after the entertainer left, Combs liked to watch his recordings of the hotel night while they had sex for a replay.
Straight back out to Tisa Tell standing by at the courthouse, pop culture investigator and star of Tisa Tell's on YouTube. Tisa, okay, they would play back the video of the hotel night, a.k.a. freak off, a.k.a. Sex session, rape torment. Like a football game, like a replay?
Like the worst Netflix and chill in the world. It gets deeper than that. He would literally mirror his phone onto the television screen. So she was forced to do that. She was doing everything she could to get out of the next freak off, and she suddenly saw him texting an escort off of her phone, "Hey, why don't you come on?" What they described in court was something that, again, I get the cuckold, but then I went and I researched it. I said, okay, but I don't see crackhead in the definition of cuckold. I don't see graying gums. I don't see dressed as a burqa from the neck up and neck up from the neck down. I don't see that in a definition of a cuckold. The defense is trying to run with this. They want to say that's all it was. But again, cuckold, I never thought I would say this, but I think that Sean Diddy Combs gave cuckolding a bad name, if that's possible to do. But we were shocked in the courtroom.
Okay, let me understand the whole bi-curious claim by the girlfriend on the stand. And we're talking about Jane, not her real name. Now, she has testimony that is intrinsic to her, that is unique from the other witnesses' testimony. However, I believe that she and others, such as Mia, are there largely to buttress or corroborate Cassie Ventura, the state star witness. The Jane testimony is taking on a life of its own. Tell me about the bisexual claim.
So the bisexual claim, it's very interesting, okay? She didn't know what was going on. Keep in mind, we're still in the early parts of this Romeo, unbeknownst to her, this Romeo pimp situation, okay? He's introducing her into this life of darkness. So he's starting off slow. So she's trying to make sense of what's going on. Why does he want all these disgusting things? And they even played audio where you can see her literally, it was so embarrassing and humiliating for Diddy, where you can clearly see this woman is doing everything she can to get out of the next freak off. Again, it hasn't descended into violence and pure debauchery, but so she's Googling what's going on. Why does he like to see other men? Why does he stand in the corner and diddle with himself? What is going on? So that's when she said, "I think he's bi-curious." However, she did say this was early on. Again, the defense really didn't know what to do with her because they thought they could get her on the stand and bully her around, but she started literally saying he's a cuckold, he's bi, he has graying teeth, shaking hands, he looks like a crackhead. And they really didn't know what to do with that, and they just focused on Bottega bags, and even that kind of blew up in their face. So it was puzzling, but again, the bi was the beginning.
To Sydney Sunridge joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Sydney, this fits in hand with many of the civil claims filed by male alleged victims. Explain.
Well, Nancy, nearly half of the civil lawsuits filed against Sean Combs have come from men. And we heard this at the very beginning, just after Cassie Ventura. Rodney Jones, the music producer, was the next person to file a very explosive lawsuit. And he claimed that Sean Combs was bisexual and was in relationships with many male black celebrities.
First of all, I don't care. I don't care who sleeps with who. As long as it's not my husband, it's not my business. Until it becomes a felony. Up until then, don't care. But to Rob Shooter joining me, former PR guru for Sean Combs, how will the bi-curious allegation play in the rap world?
Not well at all. This is still one area of the music business, of the entertainment business, that has been very, very slow to embrace LGBTQ people. It has been a problem. I've been to several big events where it really is the homophobia is there. It's tried to be sort of kept under wraps, but fans don't like it. If you listen to rap music, particularly rap music that's on the charts, the most successful rap music, it is not unusual to find a misogynistic, a homophobic lyric thrown around as if it is just everyday talk. So this will not go over well. And this is probably one of the reasons that if Diddy is indeed bisexual, it's something that he will definitely want to keep hush-hush under the covers.
Day 21 in the courthouse, and standing by outside the Monahan building is Tisa Tells. Tisa, thank you for being with us. I want to quickly go to Eric Faddis joining me, jumping off something Tisa has just reported. Eric Faddis is a veteran trial lawyer, TV legal analyst, founding partner, Varner Faddis Elite Legal. Eric, this also brings back another daymare flashback of Orenthal James Simpson. While all this horrible testimony is coming in, and they put up a picture of Nicole Brown with her face just swollen and black on one side, everybody's looking at him. You know what he's doing? He's Professor Simpson taking notes. Of course, all the notes said, I did it. How do I get out of this? But what can you do when you're hearing about being a cuck and you're hearing about being naked from the neck down and a burqa from the neck up and the gray gums and blah, da, 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 da? What can he do besides take notes and squint at a screen?
That's the thing. I mean, he's been sitting in this trial hearing ungodly accusations against him. And hey, this is one of the oldest tactics there is
in
the government. Well, we'll see whose fault that is. The jury
is
hasn't
that?
Come back.
Why yet. Is he in the courtroom? Why is his ASS in a sling? That's on him. He finds himself in the courtroom. It's like he woke up like Alice in Wonderland and went, where am I? That's not what went down, man.
Is he in the courtroom because there's substantial evidence against him? Or is this the government trying to assassinate his character because they don't have the goods to bring it? Look, they're talking about cuckold and gray teeth, his body, role play, bi-curious. All of that seems like inflammatory tactics that are trying to compensate for a possible lack of actual evidence. And so, yeah, they can assassinate his character all he wants. But at the end of the day, we know how the OJ trial ended up, and this one could be going in that direction.
Okay, you know what? You sit back and keep on saying that. Just live in your dreamland, because Tisa Tells joining us. I'm about to go to Shannon Henry joining us, who fights sex assaults and sex trafficking on girls and women. Tisa Tells, could you refresh Eric Faddis's recollection about the beatings that Jane took, the four doors that were torn down barehanded by Sean Combs so he could get at her to beat her?
Absolutely. But first, I want to say, if there's anybody trying to assassinate the character, this came out with Diddy's defense team. So maybe he needs to look to see if somebody's a paid assassin on his own defense team, because they did a good job of putting their client's character in the dirt. But again, this is coming on the heels of him being literally reenacting The Shining, kicking through doors, her running through the house, locking doors, kicking through heavy wooden doors, literally putting her up in a chokehold where her little toes are dangling off, her fleeing in a dark California neighborhood, barefoot, hiding for 2 hours outside of her house, coming back, being mercilessly beating, him humiliating her by calling the woman that he's seeing while she hears all this happening, then going after she is blacked and blue with knots all over her head, she goes into the shower to kind of disassociate, and he smacks her three times and knocks her to the ground with the shower, then demands she cover up those bruises, ice the two golf ball sized knots on her heads, and ice and literally cover up her bruises, and she is forced to take this effing pill because she's not going to ruin his effing night. Drugs are forced down her throat, and then she is forced to perform a freak off. If you think that Grey Gums in any way overshadows the horror movie we heard yesterday. I don't know what to say, but I think Diddy should hire you on his team to make him feel good, because he needs someone to sit with him in his land of delusion, you know?
Joining me, Shannon Henry, president, founder, SASS, Surviving Assault, Standing Strong, is a nonprofit, which means a lot to me. She's not in it for the money, obviously, trying to eradicate abuse, sex assault, and trafficking on women and girls. People don't get it. It's not their fault. They shouldn't get it, Shannon Henry. Why should regular people that are not in the world of crime, like we are, know about what the battered women syndrome is, about what sex trafficked victims endure, why they stay in it? Could you school Eric Faddis? He needs it badly.
Of course, Nancy. I think, you know, we do a disservice to people in a way that they don't understand that human trafficking is sexual and physical violence on top of stalking on steroids. And the women that endure it have lives that are much shorter than women who don't. So, of course, the general public doesn't understand this. They don't know how it all plays out, but we do. And let's start with the obvious. When you take women and you beat them and you get them high and you coerce them into having sex.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Look at your monitor, Shannon. That is a knife one of the alleged victims put in her door because she is so afraid of Sean Combs. That's Cassie Ventura. Had a knife in the door. You hear about people afraid and they sleep with a knife or a gun under their pillow. She kept a knife by the door. And I find that interesting, Shannon Henry, after the door testimony from Jane, not her real name, that Sean Combs beat down four doors. And the jury saw pictures and maybe even video of that in the courtroom. Then they look over at Sean Combs. What? Could you explain, why is there a knife being kept in the door? Explain that to Faddis.
Let's start with this. I've trained so many thousands of women in self-defense across the world. And one of the things that I can tell you is when you train men in self-defense, they're ready to fight in the parking lot. When you train women in self-defense, they're cautious. They don't really want to use it. And the only time they really want to use it is to protect somebody else. The fact that you are looking at a knife in the door means she was so afraid for her life that she was willing to use a knife to make sure that she was safe. That's how much she understood how her life hung in the balance. That is human trafficking. There is no question.
To Eric Faddis, veteran trial lawyer joining us, founding partner of Varner Faddis Elite Legal. The defense has tried their best throughout the day to tear this witness down. They've used everything from money that Sean Combs threw at her to buy her silence to a designer bag. But I want you to hear what Sydney Sumner has learned, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Isn't it true, Sydney Sumner, that this witness, Jane, met extensively with the defense? They knew what was going to happen. Right?
Exactly, Nancy. Jane said on the stand, first thing that she said with defense attorney Tenny Garagos was, hey, how are you? They knew each other very well. She met with them all the way through April 2025, just a few months ago. So his defense team was fully prepared for what Jane was going to say on the stand, and they still had nothing to counter it.
I mean, Eric Faddis, when you have to use somebody's designer bag, I don't have one. A, I don't carry a pocketbook. I learned that trumping through housing projects, hands-free. But when I did have a pocketbook, it was a Frauda, a fake Prada. So I don't know anything about Bottega bags. You'd have to ask Dr. Bethany Marshall about that. But if you're to the point where you have to assault the victim on the stand with claims of a designer handbag? You're digging deep. You're at the bottom of the barrel, Faddis.
Well, Nancy, not sure about that. So one person's financial control might be another person's financial support. I think what defense is trying to argue is like, hey, look, she benefited from this relationship. It was mutually consensual and participatory. She got some benefits out of it. She wanted to keep seeing him. On cross-examination, they talk about that she enjoyed aspects of the freak-offs. And in fact, that they ended early at times when she express discomfort. That doesn't sound like overcoming someone's will. This sounds like a mutually beneficial relationship. At least that's how defense is going to style it. And that this was a willing participant who also got something out of it. That's what they're going
to
argue.
The defense trying their best to skewer a witness on the stand, a former girlfriend of Sean Combs, only known as Jane. To Tisa Tell standing by at the courthouse, star of Tisa Tell's on YouTube. Tisa, did they crack her? And wait, Tisa, have you ever seen, for instance, a horror movie or one of those satanic movies where
yes.
they throw holy water on the possessed person or the demon and they, ooh, and it burns them? That's what Jane is to Diddy. That's what's happening. She's the holy water being thrown on Diddy, right? And he's cringing, and they are trying to stab her through the heart with a wooden stake. That's what's happening. All day long, they went at it. Did it work? Did they crack her?
Judging from the sentiment in the courtroom, it does not look like they cracked her. She stayed strong. And this is the best they could do when she's in the early years of the relationship. She hasn't gotten to the part where he literally ripped his mask off. You know, they didn't crack her because what they were claiming is ridiculous. $150,000 over 3 years. You can make $50,000 a year, I believe, working a little bit of overtime. Again, it's always a choose your own adventure, but it's laughable to believe. And Jane did a good job of driving it home, like she said. And it literally, after that, we went immediately to a break where she said, well, how much is my body worth? Diddy's team was taken aback and flat-footed, because what do you say to something like that? Because to give a number, it proves everything we think about Diddy. But again, it was a powerful moment. And Jane, the little bunny rabbit, she is sharpening her shank and she is in there fending off. So I definitely think she did great.
Okay, to Sydney Sumner, Crime Stories investigative reporter, do I understand this correctly? That Sean Combs, a.k.a. Diddy, fetishized Shaquille O'Neal? Okay, have you ever met him? He's as tall as a door, right? I would not mess with him. I wonder how he feels finding out he's been fetishized by Sean Combs. Okay, that's neither here nor there. Plus, Michael Jordan and Kobe? What?
Well, that aligns with previous testimony that we've heard that Sean Combs specifically wanted to see entertainers' genitalia before they were invited for a freak-off because he wanted it to be as big as possible. And that plays into this sadism
thing
that Dr. Marshall has brought up.
Whoa, what? Please call me. What did you say?
Tisa Tell told us this a few days ago,
what did
Nancy?
You say about Shaq's genitalia?
I would have to assume that Shaq, being the person that he is a very large person in every aspect, Nancy.
Okay, see, here, Sydney, we talk about murder, serial murder, rape, arson, child molestation, drug lords. I don't have time for euphemisms. Okay, yesterday, you, Tisa Tells, kept talking to me about how Sean Combs, one of the sex workers, to be, quote, well endowed. Okay, you're making it sound like, as I said, a trust fund at Harvard University, when you're actually talking about the physicality, and I'm trying to put it delicately so we don't get thrown off the air, of the sex workers. Is that correct? That's a yes, no, Tisa Tells.
Yes. Yes. And listen, Grandma.
Okay. Just a yes. Okay, Sydney okay. Sumner, don't put perfume on the pig. Tell it.
Well, Nancy, it appears that Sean Combs wanted an entertainer that could make up for his Tootsie Roll. So we know that Sean Combs, according to the civil lawsuit, is not well endowed. So we think that he hired entertainers that were much more so. And this could either just be a personal insecurity, or maybe it is this sadism idea that Dr. Bethany Marshall has brought up several times, that he wanted the women who participated in these hotel nights to feel some level of pain every single time that they participated. And I wanted to respond to Eric Sattas earlier.
Go ahead, because I want to hear that.
So Sattas said that the defense made it seem that Combs ended these hotel nights early if Jane expressed being uncomfortable. But she pushed back on that idea and said, no, that was not out of sympathy for me. That was not for my protection. That was because Sean Combs didn't want to waste time on a bad hotel night when it was clear I didn't have chemistry with this entertainer. And that's why Jane says that she had a hand in hiring entertainers, because there were certain people that she at least knew and was comfortable with and wasn't so freaked out by the fact that she was having sex with a sex worker without a condom, or a very sweaty man, as Tisa told us. So the only reason she had a hand in setting these up was to protect herself. And Sean Combs never canceled anything for her comfort. It was because he didn't want to waste his time and money on a bad hotel night.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Tisa Tell's joining me at the courthouse, and I'm gearing up to go to Rob Shooter, Bethany Marshall, and Eric Faddis. Isn't it true, Tisa Tells, let me jog your memory, that Sean Combs, a.k.a. Diddy, wanted to role play where he, Combs, was Michael Jordan, and Jane was Kobe Bryant? So let me get this straight. Boy, do I need a shrink and a drink. But again, I'm a teetotaler, so I have to settle for just a shrink. So in his mind, it's Sean Combs and Jane, but it's really Sean Combs and a sex worker with Jane. And Jane is supposed to be Kobe, and the escort is supposed to be Shaq. And Diddy is supposed to be Michael Jordan. I'm sure they're all three happy to hear about this. So his fantasy is his girlfriend with a sex worker. And there's a fantasy on a fantasy where in his mind is three basketball greats having sex together. Poor Kobe is all I can say. How did that play? Okay. And I'll get back to Bethany on Itty Bitty Diddy. But how did that play in the courtroom, Tisa Tells?
In the courtroom was, everybody was looking, saying, what in the world? People were glancing at themselves like, did we hear that right? It went over like a lead balloon. It played comical. It played humiliating. But also, it really played to the point that people are really starting to say, there is something seriously wrong with that man. Past the depravity, past the cruelty. There is something seriously wrong with that man. And you look forward, and what did you see Diddy do? Like you said, eagerly looking at a screen, acting like he was reading the Manifest Destiny on his computer screen.
Okay, hold on. Dr. Bethany Marshall, I've seen what Tisa Tells is telling us a million times in the courtroom, where the defendant starts like taking notes and looking at his fingernails. In other words, playing over and over in his head, this isn't happening. This is not happening. This is not happening. But okay, you see me looking off camera. It's because I had to make a flow chart. So Sean Combs wants the sex worker to be, in the words of Sidney Sumner and Tisa Tells, well endowed. Again, this ain't a trust fund at Harvard University. That's not what we're talking about. Does this have anything to do with that?
Well, not only is Diddy the diddler on the down low, but he is compensating for his small penis. And I do think that he has, I think we would say, in all seriousness, polyperverse, meaning a perversion technically is when somebody cannot achieve orgasm through a relationship with another person. They can only achieve orgasm through some fetishized experience, like looking at a penis, maybe a high heel, a whip, a chain, something that just stimulates their fantasies, but it has nothing to do with the person they're in front of. And a common one is sadism. We talked about this yesterday after the courtroom day wrapped, is that is inflicting pain and cruelty and humiliation on another person in order to achieve sexual arousal. But in this case, identifying with Kobe Bryant and Shaquille, I think that this fantasy is of being at the center of attention, the king of the world, somebody who has great capabilities. And maybe the fact is he's compensating for his small appendage.
But one thing I don't get, Dr. Bethany Marshall, it's like a fantasy on a fantasy, and they're all weird. Okay, so let me look at my flowchart. It's a role play where Sean Combs is Michael Jordan. Okay, the paid escort, male escort, has a Shaq attack. He's Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal, and Jane is Kobe. So it's a fantasy on top of a fantasy. What is there a name for that?
You know, Nancy, I in my clinical practice, I often explore people's sexual fantasies to try to get to the bottom of what their characterological issues are. And this one would take 6 months of psychoanalysis. Let me tell you, I mean, I think there's this identification with these greats, right? That he wants to be like them. That's his raison d'etre in life. I think he wants to be penetrated by them. So the idea that he's the recipient of a sex act, but you know, you can't just call up Shaq and say, can we Netflix and chill, right? You can't do that. Or can I take you out for a drink? So what are you going to do? You're going to substitute some poor woman you're sex trafficking in your fantasy life for Shaquille O'Neal, or she substitutes for
okay,
him.
I've got to go to the PR guru on this, Rob Sheeter, joining us, host of Naughty But Nice. And you can find him at Rob Sheeter's daily newsletter on Substack. Rob Sheeter, daily newsletter on Substack. Who knew about this fascination with the NBA greats? Now, I think I recall seeing Combs front line on the court at professional basketball games with various women. But yeah, who knew he wasn't watching the scoreboard? That's not what he was doing.
I think people around him knew that he had a fascination with powerful people. When I was working with him, he had a very unusual interest,
Shooter,
fascination.
What are you saying? What are you saying? We're not talking about Gandhi or the president. Famous people, private parts. Why are you saying he was obsessed with famous people? Because from what I understand, this is what he's interested in. A set of these. Thoughts?
I don't know if I have thoughts about that, but I do have thoughts about the Grey Gums, if you want to hear about that. I don't know, Nancy. I'm not the biggest sports fan in the world. I don't know quite where to say about this one here. I think Puffy is saying it all for us, but I also think, too, this witness is amazing. This Jane Doe has revealed stuff.
You're totally rambling.
On the ropes.
Puffy is a force.
And
I don't even know what that means.
What
Puffy
thinking.
Is a force. Let's go back to your safe place. What did you mean he's obsessed with famous people?
He was really obsessed with Prince Harry and William when I worked with him. He had photographs of the young princes. They were about 18 or 19 years old. He wanted that touch of royalty to come to his parties. He would always ask me what was going on with them. Puff also, too, loved the weekly magazines. Most people think the weekly magazines come out on a Friday. They don't. They come out on a Wednesday in New York. Puff was the first person at the newsstand, or he sent an assistant to go through the weekly magazines. He would circle people that he wanted to be famous around him. Ashton Kutcher was somebody that he had a really unusual obsession with. And so Puff being obsessed with people that are powerful, successful, I think that has gone on a really long time.
So Rob Sheeter, you wouldn't touch a pair of these with a 10-foot pole, right?
Well,
you won't talk about it. But you hear the bizarre role play that he insisted on with Jane. And I got to tell you something. There's a point in the courtroom where you have to be confident enough in your case and in yourself to say no further questions, because you're making it worse. The defense is digging their own grave with their teeth, talking and talking and trying to massage Jane's testimony all day long on cross-exam has backfired spectacularly.
You're right, Nancy. No further questions. You've got me.
You know, it's one thing to be talking about Tootsie Rolls and basketball stars, but can we get down to the brass tacks about what's happening in the courtroom? I want to know the dynamic between the jurors and Jane on the stand. I can tell what Tisa Tells thinks, but how is the jury responding to her, Tisa?
The jury is responding with so much respect and so much compassion. They are locked in. They are sitting up. They are taking notes. They were hanging off of every word. And to your point about what exactly the defense is doing, imagine the jury looking at compassion, still remembering the brutality that she just testified the day before. And now they're besought with images of Diddy, Kobe, but, you know, literally they're in the room and it's like, get ready for a Shaq attack. The jury still remembers how when Diddy with this role play, they were not allowed to remix or freestyle. He was in control of everything. So he was literally directing them like they were puppets. This absurdity, this is what the jury is taking notes on. I can't imagine what's in their minds, but the fact that they are keeping set straight faces, but leaned in and taking notes, again, the more incredible and the more preposterous comes. They're just leaning in more and giving Jane so much compassion, so much breath. And again, it can't be understated enough that this is not the strongest day for the defense. We'll see if it comes back.
What can you tell me about Sean Combs's mother cozying up to the sketch artist after Sean Combs complained that the sketch artist was making him look like a koala and he didn't want to look like a koala bear? And he wanted her to change the way she was depicting him. Now I understand Sean Combs' mother asked for her own sketch in court. Don't they have better things to think about?
Listen, Nancy, audacity must be hereditary. That's all I see in the courtroom. First of all, the court sketch artist was so kind because she actually made Sean Combs look better than he's looked in a long time. At least when his smile, his gums are pink like they should be. However, the mother, the fact of the audacity that she's allegedly approaching the sketch artist, asking for things, they still think, and this goes to this overwhelming confidence that at one time helped him reach such dizzying heights. This audacity that even in the height of this, they have the ability to ask for something, to demand something that other people don't get. And to the point of other people's shit and what? How seriously are you taking this? Well, you might not see your son again. This is the last time you might see your son without being behind bars. And you're literally making sketch artists as if they're just local street paparazzi. Again, it's the audacity and it is the gall, you know? But the mom is just sitting there, the family sitting there. They're locked in on the witness. We'll see what happens.
We stop and remember an American hero, police officer Kyle Hicks, just 32, shot and killed in the line of duty, leaving behind a grieving wife, Cassie, and children Riley, Katie, Amelia, and Tucker, four children sentenced to life without their father. American hero, police officer Kyle Hicks. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast, guaranteed human.